Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Targeted Talks. I'm your host, Jordan Sava. In this episode, Dr. Edwin Choi discusses the recent approval of afami-cel for the treatment of patients with advanced synovial sarcoma. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Choi. Would you mind just starting by introducing yourself to our audience?
Right now.
So I'm Edwin Choi. I am director of the sarcoma program at Mass General Hospital and at Mass General Brigham. I'm an assistant professor of medicine at the Harvard Medical School.
Perfect. And to start, can you provide an overview of afami-cel and its mechanism of action?
So afami-cel is a T-cell receptor therapy. And so what we do is we harvest T cells from the patient, and then we modify the receptor to target a cancer protein called MAGE-A4. And so once the T cell receptor is genetically modified, we can reinfuse the T cells back into the cancer patient. And in theory, these T cells can now target the tumor because they're attracted to the MAGE-A4 target. And so it is a form of immunotherapy. And so people can have the same types of side effects of other immunotherapeutic drugs. So cytokine release syndrome occurred in the majority of these patients to some degree. Most of them were grade 1 and 2. There was one patient with a grade 3. And then you can also develop cytopenias with low neutrophils, low lymphocytes. You can have other autoimmune type effects from this. But overall, I think the study found the treatment to be relatively tolerable, sort of online with other CAR T-cell and other T-cell receptor therapy.
Yeah, that's perfect. And I guess off of that, how does afami-cel compare with existing treatment options for synovial sarcoma in terms of efficacy and safety?
So the existing treatment options for synovial sarcoma are largely standard cytotoxic chemotherapies. And so the first line treatment for synovial sarcoma is either adriamycin chemotherapy or combination of adriamycin with ifosfamide. The combination therapy is more effective in that it has a higher response rate, though it's questionable that it leads to longer survival. The afami-cel treatment in the clinical trial showed an overall response rate of about 37%. That includes 39% in synovial sarcoma, which is what led to the FDA approval. The same study also tested a smaller cohort of patients with myxoid round cell liposarcomas, and that response rate was about 25%. So among the synovial sarcoma, if you're looking at a 39% response rate, that's sort of on par with what you can get with adriamycin and ifosfamide. I think a lot of these patients had chemotherapy first, and they were looking at this clinical trial as a second or third or fourth line option. And in that situation, the response rates that we have available as standard or commercially available drugs have a much lower response rate. And so for patients whose disease relapsed after first line therapy with adriamycin and ifosfamide, the options that we have to treat them typically have an average response rate of 30% or less. And so the fact that we now have a treatment that has a 39% response rate in synovial sarcoma is a significant advantage over what we had available before this trial.
Perfect. That's great. And were there any other notable findings from the Spearhead-1 trial or previous clinical trials that led to the pending approval?
Well, this trial was born out of a smaller study that did show some responses. So we were expecting to have some patients benefit from the treatment. What we did not expect was just the high percentage of patients who did benefit from it. And so, when we talk about response rate, we include significant tumor shrinkage. But then, there's also another subset of patients who probably had a longer period of stable disease as a result of participating in this trial. And so, if you think about this metastatic synovial sarcoma as largely being a fatal disease that has no known cure, then even when you can stabilize the disease and add several months to their overall lifespan, that's still a significant benefit to this patient population.
Definitely. And you talked about the cytokine release syndrome and some of the cytopenia. How did you manage this in your patients?
It was pretty manageable, but since there was a clinical trial, we were very careful. And so most of our patients were treated either in a very intensive monitoring clinical research facility or just admitted as an inpatient. So we can monitor them for at least a week. And then even when they were discharged from the clinical trial facility or the inpatient facility, we had all the patients stay close by for another few weeks just to make sure that if there were side effects, they could be seen right away. And you could imagine a lot of these patients came from very far away. And so I think we were really being strict in making those patients who come from far away stay near us for several weeks after the infusion. So I think you need to do all of that in a commercial setting. I'm hoping that a lot of the commercially treated patients will be treated locally. So there'll be a lot more commercial sites for this treatment than there were clinical trial sites. And so if you're a patient in a part of the country that perhaps could not participate in a clinical trial, you may have more centers that could participate in the commercial administration of this treatment.
What does this kind of mean for community oncologists, and what should one know about the approval?
So I don't think this necessarily replaces first line chemotherapy because Adriamycin and ifosfamide does have a relatively high response rate. And if you respond well, you could have a pretty durable response. And so I see this product as sort of being useful, alongside standard chemotherapy rather than instead of. Also, you have to know that, it is a dangerous treatment. And so, if you're only treating one patient a year, then you probably want the patient to go to a higher volume facility that is used to providing this treatment more frequently or seeing this disease more often.
That makes sense. And in the same kind of realm, how can healthcare providers best prepare to incorporate afami-cel into their treatment protocols for synovial sarcoma?
So to even qualify for afami-cel, you have to meet two criteria. First of all, the disease itself has to express the target, otherwise treatment would be useless. And so you have to test the tumor for MAGE-A4. And so I think the field is probably moving toward an SOP, a standard operating procedure, where all synovial sarcomas, once the diagnosis is made, will also be tested for MAGE-A4 expression. The same way other sarcomas like a GIST is almost always tested for c-KIT expression because that is a target for GIST treatment. Similarly, we'll look at synovial sarcoma as a MAGE-A4 expressing tumor that is amenable to this type of therapy. So I think MAGE-A4 will be tested almost right off the bat by pathology. And then for the community oncologist, if you know your patients have synovial sarcoma, I would encourage testing early for something called HLA. So HLA is the immunotype that will determine whether or not this product can be used or not at all for the patient. So this product was developed for patients with a specific HLA A02 subtype. And I forget exactly what percentage of the population. I'm thinking maybe around 50% of the Caucasian population expresses HLA A02, and then less so in the non-Caucasian population. So I would encourage community oncologists who know a patient has this diagnosis to test early for both the HLA and the MAGE-A4.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that answer. And I guess just how does the success of afami-cel in targeting synovial sarcoma influence the future of T-cell receptor therapy for other solid tumors?
Yeah, very exciting. I mean, this is probably first in class if you think of solid tumor as a class. It's one of the early, it's one of the leaders in T cell therapy for solid tumors. So I think I'm hoping that this encourages enthusiasm in testing other solid tumors. An obvious low hanging fruit is the myxoid liposarcomas that was included in the study. They had a slightly lower response rate, but even then, they had a 25% response rate, which would still be amazing, in clinic if I was able to offer a patient a 25% response rate in the third or fourth line setting, where the response rates that we have currently available are typically less than 20%.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting. And off of that, are there any potential challenges in expanding this therapy to other types of solid tumors? And if so, what kind of research is needed?
Well, because it's a dangerous treatment, I sort of anticipate or I fear a moment where we get a few bad outcomes on patients, and then it may change how much access other patients could have to this product. So I think early on, it's important to treat patients with a lot of caution. Monitor them very closely, be quick to refer them to high volume centers, or even be quick to have the high volume centers be the ones that treat the patient. Because, since it's a new drug, it's a new first in class, it's a new way, a new whole new philosophy of treating a cancer patient. If it goes wrong, then it could set back progress for all T cell therapy research. And so, part of me is a little bit afraid that that might happen. But the company is so vigilant and so good about providing information and making sure that it's done carefully. I think we've got some good safeguards in place to make sure that that at least safety and feasibility of this treatment in the community setting is possible.
Definitely. And lastly, is there anything else that one should know about this approval moving forward?
Well, I mean, I think I'd like to make aware that this HLA restriction is, it largely favors the Caucasian population. So, if we're thinking in terms of diversity and equity, I'd love to see this product and others open up to a more diverse population. And so, I've already talked about this with the company, and they're well aware that they need to try to diversify their target. They chose the target not for any nefarious reason, but really because it'll reach the most people in the shortest amount of time. And so I understand why they did it, but I think moving forward, it would be really nice to expand the product so that it can more fairly include the rest of the population that we see here in the United States. We need to make sure people understand that it's still a dangerous treatment, that you still need to be monitored carefully. You need to screen for eligible patients early and often. And one other thing is the commercial product will have a strict eligibility. So you'll have to not only just meet the HLA and the MAGE-A4, but you'll also have to meet other criteria for being healthy enough to get this treatment. And that's because it's an early drug and you want to give it safely, and you don't want to you don't want to end up treating a lot of really sick people and end up making them sicker. I don't think that's going to help you or the product or the patient. And so, with that in mind, certain high centers of sarcoma volume like ours have an expanded access program called an EAP, where we can still go ahead and treat patients even though they don't fully meet all of the criteria for commercial use. And I think that's done so that, in compassionate fashion, we can make sure that as many patients who can benefit from this drug have access to the drug. And also, it'll be us who do it, where, we could, we have a lot of experience using this product. We have a lot of experience treating this patient population. So hopefully that combination could make it safer for patients who otherwise would not meet the criteria for commercial.